Hi, everyone. This is Alicia Halliday, and welcome to the ASF Weekly Science Podcast. I spent the early part of the week in Washington, D.C. at the Autism Speaks Thought Leadership Conference on Reducing Disparities in Autism Spectrum Disorders. We focused on those from racially and ethnically diverse backgrounds, those in rural areas and could be geographically isolated, and those who are poor. There are, of course, other disparities and differences in diagnosis and access to services, including things like sex differences and those from different ends of the spectrum. So when do things that are just differences become a disparity? People who are much smarter than I am have been debating this for a while, trying to come to some clear definition. So some researchers say that all of these differences versus disparities fall along a continuum, so that disparities vary from just differences, and that disparities cause the results to be unfair and rooted in discrimination. Where they draw the line between fair and unfair is subjective, but it's loosely related to how much control a person has over the factor that is causing the disparity. Those factors that are not subject to a person's own choice at all, but rather facts that a person is endowed with, are typically considered to contribute to an inequity. The CDC says that if a health outcome is seen to be lesser or greater between populations, there's a disparity. Race or ethnicity, sex, sexual identity, age, disability, socioeconomic status, and geographic location all contribute to an individual's ability to have good health. It's important to recognize the impact that social determinants have on health outcomes of specific populations. Healthy People, which is an initiative formed by the national government years ago, strives to improve the health outcome of all groups. I just want to say this podcast isn't about debate of disparity versus difference. It's about disparities in racial and ethnic and financial access to diagnosis and services and the way that people from these backgrounds are being treated. So let's get to it. Racial and ethnic disparities are well documented in autism, both with recognition of symptoms, diagnosis, and access to services. The research and advocacy organizations may not agree on everything and take a different approach to different questions, but there are topics we all agree upon. That may be kind of shocking to you, but it is true. Members of Autism Speaks attended a meeting on the, quote, hard-to-reach communities earlier this year hosted by Autism Science Foundation and made an important contribution to the discussion. Full contribution across research perspectives is essential to deliver a clear advocacy message based on data. So that's why I helped organize and moderate the stakeholder panel at the Autism Speaks meeting, including an environmental justice component. Environmental justice is the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, or income with respect to development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, exposure, regulation, and policies. This community has been dealing with similar situations with regards to disparities, and I thought they could provide important insights on what to do and where they start. I'm going to let Autism Speaks report back on the meeting. It was really theirs, but I do want to take this opportunity to give a brief update on why this is such an important issue. What does the data tell us? And what can scientists and researchers do to reduce these disparities? So despite improvements in awareness and diagnosis, the prevalence of autism spectrum disorders in those from African American or Hispanic backgrounds is still significantly lower than those of Caucasian children. In addition to lower rates of diagnosis, there's still a delay in the age of diagnosis, which does not seem to be improving, and reduction in the utilization of services for autism. So this is still a significant and important issue. Some factors that may affect accurate diagnostic prevalence include cultural factors, a lack of understanding of autism, not just on both the parents, but physicians. In addition, in many cases, families feel that their caregivers at best are not listening to them and probably at worst are racist. This was underscored over and over again by families at the meeting. Those with children from African American backgrounds are much more likely to be diagnosed if more severe symptoms present themselves, like outbursts or aggression, an effect which is observed independently of low socioeconomic status or being in poverty. This underdiagnosis of racial and ethnic minorities and autism has compounded the problem of ensuring diversity in research studies. Research-based efforts to improve access and screening to services specifically targeting the underserved communities are now being funded, but in the meantime, disparities in diagnosis still exist, along with disparities in accessing specialty services to those who need help with their autism spectrum disorder. These differences in diagnosis contribute to this disparity in research participation, and this is a catch-22 or a cycle, which would ultimately help provide more personalized services for those in different racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic backgrounds. Now, you must all know that the issue of diversity is not unique to autism research. There's a general lack of diversity in recruitment that's plagued clinical trials generally, leading to barriers in generalizing findings from one population to another. However, the gap in differences in diagnosis and those participating in research studies seems to be exaggerated in autism, where the vast majority of participants in research are Caucasian and from middle to high socioeconomic backgrounds. They're rich white people. So what are some of the challenges in studying groups underrepresented in autism research? So stigma plays an important role in the underdiagnosis of autism. Stigma may relate to why parents don't want to admit their child has autism to themselves, to other people in the community, and to their doctors. So they may try and hide or explain away the features of autism to clinicians for fear of the autism label. In addition, stigma has a direct influence on teacher participation in research studies and recognition of signs and symptoms of autism in the school. Unfortunately, racial and ethnic minorities experience poor health outcomes on a number of diseases outside of neurodevelopmental disorders like cancer, heart disease, among any other. This is in part because of implicit bias and discrimination. As a result, there's a lack of trust in the medical community in general. Autism spectrum disorders adds an additional layer of complexity because there's a lack of evidence-based intervention options that are effective across individuals on the spectrum. All white people are different across the spectrum, and so this is an issue. Professionals sometimes, but not always, give mixed messages about an autism diagnosis and prognosis because of this lack of understanding or lack of services to refer to. Because of this, there's even a hesitancy to conduct universal screening for autism, which might partially alleviate the disparity in diagnosis. But as some new data suggests, even in situations where everyone goes through screening, it doesn't always lead to a change in the disparities across racial and ethnic backgrounds. Also, with regards to screening, English proficiency is a major barrier to care and research in autism, as bilingual research staff or interpreters are not always available. Non-white children are also less likely to access specialty clinics for autism spectrum disorders, which may help participant recruitment into research studies. Now, a new study by Duquesne University reported that while Caucasian and minority families received similar types of care, the Caucasian families felt that they were more engaged. They also were more satisfied in the services their children received from outside doctors and healthcare providers. On the other hand, minority families felt that the school listened to them more than outside providers. This is really shocking, at least to me. But it's not just about race and ethnic backgrounds either. Those from low socioeconomic backgrounds, for example, the poor, are also at a disadvantage because an autism diagnosis can be a costly process. And while insurance mandates have lessened the financial burden somewhat and are definitely worthwhile, there's still variation across states and types of coverage that doesn't always solve those financial barriers completely. Single working parents who work outside the home during the preschool years and have other children may not have the ability to risk lost wages from taking off of work and may not have flexible hours or transportation or other logistical support needed to both access and utilize services. Finally, because more Caucasian people participate in research, research instruments may be biased on the experiences of Caucasian people. While this is rapidly changing, still many test instruments have not been validated to ensure their appropriateness for other cultures. And work done so far has found some differences across the cultures. Of course, if there was more participation in research studies from a more diverse community, validation of different instruments for use in different cultural and racial backgrounds would be addressed. But right now, the applicability of different instruments across populations does remain a concern. So if screening does not help this disparity, what does? Luckily, some advances have been made in this area. Just this year, researchers in Pennsylvania, including David Mandel, a member of our SAB, found that a quote-unquote more generous, or meaning less restrictive, Medicaid waiver did help African-American families gain access to services. It didn't eliminate the disparity, but it just reduced it. But this is also something that's actionable and evidence-based, so let's do it. Also, if there is a language barrier, let's educate doctors. And it doesn't have to mean training a doctor to speak Spanish. It means training the person in the office who already speaks Spanish to bill correctly for screening and train everyone else to recognize the signs. Bringing culturally appropriate solutions to the community is essential. These can be based on community healthcare providers that are more in tune with what the community needs, or it can be working within a system that's already accepted by the community. We saw this year already that a project led by Amanda Gullsrud at UCLA embedded screening practices into community daycare centers rather than assuming that their primary care physician would do it. Also, there's a lot we can learn from diseases like cancer. As I already mentioned, there are already disparities in diagnosis and intervention for cancer based on race and ethnicity, and of course, financial factors. Access to high-quality interventions in rural settings is a challenge for everyone, not just autism spectrum disorders. And also, finally, as I've tried to weave into this entire diatribe, it's essential that researchers figure out ways to better include people with autism from across different racial and ethnic backgrounds, regardless of geography, in different research studies, because, as I already mentioned, scientists know the most about autism in white people. ASF continues to be committed to this issue, and we will work with whoever else wants to help address it. So please contact us if you have an idea for this or if you can help in any way. Thanks for listening.